than you could ever imagine. The ladies seemed to understand, which surprised me. We were talking about mind-bending concepts, yet they seemed to relate to them. I couldn't help but wonder if they were simply tuning in to Dr. Hulen's vibe, much like a tuning fork sets a tone for everything around it that can feel its note. Dr. Hulen and I went for a walk. It was a half-mile stroll in the cool morning air on a dusty gravel road. Along the way, deer walked around us. At one point, we came across a group of dogs barking their heads off at us. We kept talking and walking. Suddenly, Dr. Hulen waved his hand at them as if to bless them and said, "We love you." The dogs stopped barking. "All any of us want is to be loved," he said. "You, me, even the dogs." One small dog in the back of the others gave out a slight peep. I couldn't stop thinking he was saying, "Right on," or maybe, "Thank you," or even, "I love you too." Our conversations were always stimulating. At one point, Dr. Hulen blew my head off by explaining that the only choice in life is to clean or not. "You're either coming from memory or inspiration," he explained. "That's it." I replied, "I've always told people that they have two choices, to come from inspiration or not. That's free will. The divine sends a message, and you act on it or not. If you do, all is well. If you don't, you may have problems." "Your choice is to clean or not clean," he said. "If you are clear, then when inspiration comes, you just act. You don't think about it. If you think about it, then you are comparing the inspiration to something, and what you are comparing it to is a memory. Clean the memory, and you don't have choice. You just have inspiration, and you act on it without thinking. It just is." Woo! That insight truly shook me. I felt bad that I'd been writing and speaking about choice being free will, and now I learned that free will means you are still stuck in memory. When you are at the zero state and there are zero limits, you don't do anything but what is there for you to do. That's it. "It's like we are in a grand symphony," Dr. Hulen explained. "Each of us has an instrument to play. I have one too. Your readers have theirs. None are the same. In order for the concert to play and everyone to enjoy it, they need to play their part and not another's. We get into trouble when we don't pick up our instrument or we think someone has a better one. That's memory." I began to see that a concert has stagehands, promoters, cleanup crew. Everyone had a role. I also reflected on the different people I knew who seemed clueless to their own method of success. There's James Caan, the famous actor from The Godfather and the TV series Las Vegas. I've met him several times. His stardom is as much a mystery to him as it is to you or me. He's a brilliant actor, even legendary, but all he's doing is being himself. He's playing his part in the universe's script. The same could be said for me. Some people who meet me act like I'm some sort of guru. If they've seen me in the movie The Secret or read any of my books, especially The Attractor Factor, they think I'm plugged into God's hotline. Truth is, I'm just playing my instrument in the concert of life. When you play your role and I play my role, the world works. It's when you try to be me or I try to be you that problems arise. "Who set up all these roles?" I asked Dr. Hulen. "Divinity," he said. "Zero." "When was it set up?" "Long before you and I ever showed up as even an amoeba." "Does that mean there is no free will at all, that we're just stuck in our roles?" "You have total free will," he said. "You are creating as you are breathing. But to live from zero, you must let go of all memories to be there." I have to admit, I didn't fully understand all of this yet. But the part I did get was that it's my job to play my instrument. If I play mine, then I am a piece of the puzzle of life that found its slot. But if I try to fit into another area of the board, I won't fit, and the entire picture will be off. Your conscious mind will try to understand it all, Dr. Hulen clarified, but your conscious mind is only aware of 15 bits of information, while there are 15 billion bits happening all the time. Your conscious mind doesn't have a clue what's really happening. That wasn't very comforting, at least not to my conscious mind. As I mentioned earlier, I taught a seminar one day called The Secret of Money. I told everyone that they will have money if they are clear. If they are broke, they aren't clear. I told Dr. Hulen about it, and he agreed. Memories can keep money away, he said. If you are clear about money, you'll have it. The universe gives it if you will accept it. It is memories playing that keep it from you or you from seeing it. How do you get clear? Keep saying, I love you, he said. Do you say it to money? You can love money, but it's better to just say it to the divine. When you are at zero, you have zero limits, and even money can come to you. But when you are in memory, you will prevent it. There are many memories around money. As you clean them, they get cleaned for everyone. We went into a deli and ordered coffee. The place was quiet as we sat there, but slowly people streamed in and the place got busier and louder. The energy in the place grew. You noticed that? Dr. Hulen asked me. Well, there's a buzz to the place, I said. People seem happier. We came in and we brought our cleaner selves and the place is feeling it, he said. He told me about going into restaurants in Europe. They would be slow, but after he visited, business increased. He tried this in a few different places to see if the same thing happened. It did. He then went to a restaurant owner and said, "If we come in and your business improves, will you give us a free meal?" The owner agreed. Dr. Hulen would often get free meals from just being. I noticed that he gave money freely. We went into a little shop. He bought a few stained glass items for friends. He then slapped a $20 bill on the counter and said, "And this is for you." The clerk looked surprised, and naturally so. He added, "It's only money." Later, at a restaurant, I gave a large tip to the waitress. She stared, her eyes wide and her mouth dropping open. "I couldn't accept this," she said. "Yes, you can," I countered. Still, later, I got an idea for a product that I knew would make me a large amount of money. Dr. Hulen pointed out, the universe rewarded you for your generosity. You gave, so it gave back. It gave you that inspiration. Had you not given, it would not have given to you. Ah, and there was the real secret to money. We Americans forget that it says right on our money, "In God we trust," said Dr. Hulen. We print it, but we don't believe it. At one point, Dr. Hulen asked me about the nutritional company I had founded with a physician and a nutritionist. We created it to market a cholesterol-lowering natural formula we call Cardio Secret, and you can learn about it at cardiosecret.com. Dr. Hulen had consulted with me a while back about the product name as well as the name of the company. He was curious to see where we went with it. "It's on hold right now," I said. "I hired an FDA attorney to review our website and our packaging, and we're waiting on him. But as a result of working on this product, I got an idea for an even more exciting product, something I call Fit-A-Rita." I went on to explain that Fit-A-Rita is a natural margarita mix. You can read about it at www.fitarita.com. I received the idea for it while out drinking with friends. I was in yet another bodybuilding fitness contest at that time, so having a margarita was a rare and special thing for me. While drinking one, I said, "What we need is a bodybuilder's margarita." As soon as I said it, I knew it was a good idea. "Good for you, Joseph," Dr. Hulen said. "You weren't attached to the first product and wanting things to go your way, so the divine gave you a new money-making idea. Too many people lock on to an idea and try to force it to fit their expectations, and what they're doing is blocking the very wealth they want to receive, Good for you, Joseph. Good for you. He's right, of course. As long as I stay open to ideas from the divine, they keep coming. Besides the Fitterita product, I also received an idea for clearing mats. These are mats you place your food on to clean it and you before you dine. You can read about those at clearingmats.com. But I didn't stop there. Dr. Hu Len received an idea, too. I've never seen a website that cleans people while they sit and look at it, he told me. Let's make our website for our book just that. When people go there, they are being cleaned by what we infuse in the site. We did just that, too. You can see it at zerolimits.info. There's no end to the amount of ideas you can receive and money you can receive once you let go of your need and allow it all to come to you. The key, as always, is to just keep cleaning, cleaning, cleaning. What should therapists do when they see clients, I asked, wanting to probe for specific methods in helping people to heal? Just love them, Dr. Hu Len replied. But what if somebody comes to you because they were traumatized at some point and they aren't over it, I asked, wanting to back Dr. Hu Len into a corner and force him to squeeze out some method I could do. All everyone wants is to be loved, he said. Isn't that what you want? It doesn't matter what you say or do as long as you love the person. So I could be a Jungian or a Freudian or a Reichian or anything else? It doesn't matter, he stressed. What matters is that you love the person because they are a part of you, and your loving them will help erase and clean and clear the program activated in their life. I wasn't settling for that answer, though I could see his point. But what if someone is certifiably crazy? I asked. I had a woman come to me who was considered schizophrenic, he began. I asked her to tell me her story. You have to understand that whatever she or anyone tells me isn't the real issue. Their story is their conscious interpretation of events. What's really happening is out of their awareness. But hearing the story is the starting place. Well, what did she say? She told me her story and I listened. I just kept repeating, I love you, in my mind, to the divine, trusting whatever needed to be cleaned would be cleaned. At one point, she told me her full name, which was one of those hyphenated names. Like Vitali Odin or some such? Exactly. I knew that was part of the problem. When someone has a split name, it creates a split personality. She needed to own her birth name. Did you ask her to legally change her name? She didn't have to go that far, he explained. By telling herself that her name was one word, she began to relax and feel whole again. But was it the name change or your saying, I love you, that made the difference for her? Who knows? But I want to know, I said. I started a Miracles Coaching program at miraclescoaching.com. I want to be sure my coaches say and do the right thing so they truly help people. Dr. Hu Len went on to explain, therapists think they are here to help people or save people. But in reality, their job is to heal themselves of the program they see in their patients. As those memories get canceled in the therapist, they get canceled in the patient. It doesn't matter what you or your coaches say or do, as long as they keep loving the person they are with, he explained again. Remember, the person you see is the mirror of you. What they experience is shared by you. Clean the shared program and you'll both get well. But how? I love you, he said. Well, I'm beginning to sense a theme here. I've been trying to figure out how the world works since I was old enough to read children's books and then comic books. Superman and the Flash were pretty easy to understand. Today I have to deal with science, religion, psychology, and philosophy, as well as my own mental wanderings. Just when I think I have a handle on things, along comes another book to disturb my view of the world. This time I was reading Consciousness Speaks by Balsekar when I started to get a headache. If I had to sum up its message in words from a man confused by reading the book, I'd say that nothing we do comes from free will. It's all being prompted through us. We think we are the conscious actors. We're wrong. That's our egos talking. In some respect, we're puppets, with the divine as the energy in us pulling our strings. Now imagine this. I'm the guy who wrote the book, The Attractor Factor. It explains a 5-step process for having, doing, or being anything you want. I and others have used the method to attract everything from wealth to cars to spouses to health to jobs to, well, you name it. It's all about declaring your intention and then acting on what comes your way or bubbles up from within to make it manifest. In short, you're the puppeteer and the world is your puppet. So, how do I fit these two apparently conflicting philosophies in my head without going bonkers? I think it works like this. First, we are living in a belief-driven world. Whatever you believe will work. It'll get you through the day at any rate. It will frame your experiences into perceptions that make sense to you. And when something comes your way that doesn't seem to match your worldview belief system, you'll find a way to rationalize it and force it to fit. Or you'll take Valium. Second, I can't help but wonder if both philosophies are right. We're the puppet and the puppeteer. But that only works when we get out of our own way. It's our minds that drive us to drink, overeat, frolic, steal, lie, and even spend too much time worrying about how the world works. Our minds get in the way of the natural flow of things. Our minds know it's doomed and it can't stand the thought of it, so it constructs feel-good addictions to help it survive. In reality, whatever that is, your mind is the interference to experiencing the bliss of this moment. If this is so, then all the techniques to get clear, which I talk about as step 3 in my book, The Attractor Factor, are there to help you take the interference out of the divine plan. For example, when you use a method like EFT, the tapping your troubles away approach to life, you dissolve the issues troubling you. But then what happens? Then you take a positive action. Well, weren't you going to take that positive action anyway? Isn't that why you knew there was a problem to begin with? In other words, the nudge to take action was sent to you from the divine, and your anxiety over it was the interference. Take away the interference, and you're back to being one with the divine, which means you're puppet and puppeteer again. So let me try to sum up what at least makes sense to me today. You came into this world with a gift within yourself. You may know it right away or not. You may not even know it right now. At some point, you'll sense it within you. Now, your mind is going to judge it. If your mind judges it as bad, you'll seek therapy or methods or drugs or addictions to handle it, hide it, resolve it, release it, or accept it. But once you have removed that interference preventing you from acting on your gift, you'll act on that gift. In short, you'll be the puppet of the divine, but you'll be the puppeteer of your life. Your choice is to go with the flow or not. That's free will. Some call it free won't because your real decision is to act on the impulse or not. Even the great showman and marketeer, P.T. Barnum, who I wrote about in my book, There's a Customer Born Every Minute, knew this. He took action. He did things on a grand scale, but he was always obeying some higher order. His gravestone marker reads, "Not my will, but thine be done." He acted on his ideas without interference from his mind, and he allowed the results to be what they were, trusting that it was all part of the universe's bigger picture. He was able to let go while taking action. And that's step 5 in my book, The Attractor Factor. Tonight, I have the world figured out, I think. Tomorrow, I'm not so sure. I long for those comic books once again. Everyone has a gift, Dr. Hulen told me on one of our walks. What about Tiger Woods? I asked, knowing the answer but wanting to lead to a deeper question. He's playing his role in the divine play. But what about when he starts to teach others how to play golf? He'll never succeed, Dr. Hulen said. His role is playing golf, not teaching golf. That's someone else's role. We each have our part. Even a janitor? Yes. There are janitors and garbage collectors who love their work, Dr. Hulen said. You don't think so because you are imagining playing their roles. But they can't play your role either. I suddenly remembered a line from an old self-improvement course. If God told you what to do, you'd do it and be happy. Well, what you are doing is what God wants you to do. The point is not to resist your role. I might long to be a songwriter like Michelle Malone, or an actor like James Caan, or a bodybuilder like Frank Zane, or a writer like Jack London. I might even get pretty good at writing songs, acting, working out, or writing novels. But my role is inspirator. I write books to awaken people. To be exact, to awaken me. As I awaken me, I awaken you. Cigars, hamburgers, and killing the divine.
Cleaning helps reduce the mortgage on your soul, Dr. Hulen.
One day, Dr. Hulen wanted to get something to eat. It was on a Monday evening. We were in my small town where everybody is busy entertaining tourists on the weekend and often closed on Monday to recover. There was only one place open that I could think of, a hamburger joint called Burger Barn. I didn't want to even mention the place, as I figured he would not want unhealthy food. Plus, with my lifestyle change and new eating habits, I didn't dare even drive near a fast food place. But I told Dr. Hulen about it anyway. A burger sounds great, he said, obviously excited. Are you sure? I asked. Oh, yeah, I love a good burger. Well, we drove to the place and parked. We went in and sat down. The menu didn't have much on it of a healthy food choice nature. I'll have a double meat, double cheeseburger on a white bun, Dr. Hulen ordered. I was stunned. That was heart attack food, in my opinion. Meat, cheese, and a white bun? I couldn't believe it. I also couldn't believe that I ordered the same thing. I figured if it was good enough for the shaman, it ought to be good enough for me. Aren't you worried about the cheese and meat and bread? I asked Dr. Hulen. Not at all, he said. I have a chili dog every morning for breakfast. I love this stuff. You do? It's not the food that is dangerous, he explained to me. It's what you think about the food. I had heard that comment before, but I never believed it. I figured the solid trumped the thought. But maybe I was wrong. He went on to explain, before I eat anything, in my mind I say to the food, I love you, I love you. If I am bringing anything into this situation that would cause me to feel ill as I am eating you. It's not even me. It's something that triggers that I am willing to be responsible for. I then go on and enjoy the meal because now it's clean. Once again, his insight startled me and awakened me. I had spent so much time reading about health issues and food warnings that I was so paranoid I couldn't enjoy a simple hamburger. I decided to clean on it. When the food arrived, we ate it with gusto. This hamburger is the best I've ever had, Dr. Hulen announced. He was so impressed that he went and asked for the cook and then thanked him. The cook wasn't used to people acknowledging his deep-fried burgers. He didn't know what to say. Neither did I. When I gave Dr. Hulen a tour of my home, including my gym, I held my breath. I keep cigars in my gym. It seems ironic to work out in the morning and smoke in the evening, but there you go. That's my life. but I worried that Dr. Houlin might say something about my smoking. I showed him my various equipment, pictures of famous bodybuilders on the walls, the certificates I've received for the fitness contest I've been in. I tried to steer him away from the cigars sitting on a bench, but he noticed them. "What's this?" he asked. "Cigars," I said with a sigh. "You smoke working out?" "No, no, but I do in the evening," I explained. "It's my meditation time. I sit on the deck, smoke, and feel gratitude for my life." He was silent for a moment. I was waiting for him to rattle off all the statistics showing why smoking is bad for you. Finally, he spoke. "I think it's beautiful." "You do?" I asked. "I think you should smoke a cigar with your Pano's car." "What do you mean? Have a picture taken of me in front of Francine with a cigar in my hand?" "Maybe, but I was thinking you can smoke while you polish her or dust her down." "I thought you were going to ridicule me for smoking," I finally told him. "One person read my blog, saw I mentioned cigars, and wrote me that I was putting toxins into my body and hurting myself." "I guess that person never heard of the American Indian custom of passing the peace pipe," he said, "or how smoking in many tribes is a rite of passage and a way to bond and share and be a family." I was once again learning that the key for Dr. Houlin is to love everything. When you do, that thing changes. Smoking is bad when you think it is bad. Hamburgers are bad when you think they are bad. As with everything in the ancient Hawaiian traditions, it all begins with thought, and the great healer is love. I was finally beginning to understand him and how important it is to get to the zero limits state. But not everyone felt the same as me. One night, I went on a teleseminar and told everyone about my experiences with Dr. Houlin, most of which I've told you here. They listened attentively. They asked questions. They seemed to understand what I was explaining. But to my surprise, at the end of the call, they resumed their normal way of thinking. While we all agreed that we need to take 100% responsibility for our lives, they were again talking about others. While all agreed that the cleaning method Dr. Houlin taught me was powerful, they again went back to old habits. One person said, "I don't want to say I'm sorry, because whatever I say after I am is what I will become." I wanted to say, "Well, we can clean on that," knowing that her statement was just a belief. But I simply said, "Dr. Houlin says, do whatever works for you." I admit, at first I thought this was frustrating. But then I realized I had to clean on this too. After all, if I take 100% responsibility for what I experience, I am experiencing them. And if the only tool to clean is, "I love you," then I need to clean on what I saw in others, as what I saw in others was in me. This may be the hardest part of Ho'oponopono to understand. There's nothing out there. It's all in you. Whatever you experience inside yourself. One person challenged me on this issue by asking, "What about the 50 million people who voted for the president I don't like? Clearly, I had nothing to do with their actions." "Well, where do you experience those 50 million people?" I asked. "What do you mean, where do I experience them?" he countered. "I read about them, see them on television, and it's a fact they voted for him." "But where do you experience all of that information?" "In my head, as news." "Inside yourself, right?" I asked. "Well, I process the information inside myself, yes, but they are outside of me. I don't have 50 million people in me." "Actually, you do," I said. "You experience them in you, so they don't exist unless you look within yourself." "But I can look out and see them." "You see them inside yourself," I stated. "Everything you process is in you. If you don't process it, it doesn't exist." "Is this like if a tree falls in a forest and no one is there, does it make a sound?" "Exactly." "This is crazy." "Exactly," I said, "but it's the way home." I then decided to test him even further. I asked, Can you tell me what your next thought will be? He was quiet for a moment. He wanted to blurt out an answer, but realized he couldn't. No one can predict their next thought, I explained. You can verbalize it once it occurs to you, but the thought itself arises from your unconscious. You have no control over it. The only choice you have is once the thought appears to act on it or not. I don't follow. You can do any number of things once the thought arises, but it's being generated in your unconscious, I explained. In order to clean the unconscious so you get better thoughts, you have to do something else. Such as? Well, I'm writing a whole book about it, I replied, referring to this book you're listening to right now. And what does this have to do with the 50 million people out there? They're no more out there than your own thoughts are, I said. It's all inside you. All you can do is clean in order to clear out the storehouse of programs in your mind. As you clean, the thoughts that arise get more positive and productive and even loving. I still think all of this is batty, he said. I'll clean on that, I replied. Most likely, he never got it. But if I'm to get to zero limits, I have to take total responsibility for him not getting it. His memory is my memory. His program is my program. The very fact that he voiced it to me means I share it with him. So, as I get clear of it, so will he. As I'm recording this, I'm saying I love you in my thoughts, behind the words, behind the recording, behind the computer, behind the scenes. My saying I love you as I work, write, read, play, talk, or think is my attempt to do non-stop cleaning, erasing, clearing of anything and everything between me and zero. Can you feel the love? One morning, Dr. Hulen said he saw a logo for me containing a four-leaf clover. The fourth petal is gold, like a tongue, he said. He spent several minutes describing what he was seeing in his mind or in the air. I'm not sure where he was getting his impression. Neither was he. You need to find an artist to sketch the logo for you, he said. Later, we went for a walk into town. We had lunch and then visited a few shops. The first shop contained stained glass art. We were both impressed. As we admired the shopkeeper's handiwork, she said, "If you ever need a logo or a sketch, we can draw it for you." Dr. Hulen grinned and leaned in my direction, as I grinned and leaned in his. Coming from zero meant synchronicity happened. While I was writing a section of the book that became this recording, I had to stop to be interviewed for another movie. This one is like The Secret, but focused on getting healthy with your thoughts. I began the interview by saying thoughts weren't as important as no thoughts. I tried to explain the zero limit state of being, where you allow the divine to heal you, not you heal you. I wasn't sure why I was saying all of this. A part of me questioned my sanity, but I went with the flow. After the camera was turned off, the woman observing it all almost blurted out that she heals people by entering the zero state. Turns out she is a physician who now heals animals by entering the no-thought, zero-limit state of being while in the presence of the ill animals. She showed me pictures of dogs with cataracts and then the after photos where they are completely healed. Once again, the divine was proving that the divine has all the power, not me. I can just clean so I can hear it and obey it. Last night, I spent an hour and a half on the phone with a best-selling author and self-help guru. I've been a fan of his for years. I love all of his books. I'm a groupie for his message. Since he also likes my work, we finally connected and talked. But I was stunned by what we talked about. This personal growth expert narrated a horrifying true story of his last couple years. He had been victimized and abused by someone he loves. While I listened, I wondered how he could say he was a victim when his published message was about taking responsibility for your life. It began to dawn on me that almost everyone, including the self-help experts who try to teach us how to live, including me, don't have a clue what they are doing. They are still missing a piece of the puzzle. They get to a point where they think what worked in the past for them will work at all times in the future and for everyone else. But life isn't like that. We're all different, and it's always changing. Just when you think you have it figured out, along comes a new wrench, and your life looks out of hand once again. Dr. Hulen's work teaches us to let go and trust the divine while constantly cleaning all the thoughts and experiences that surface in the way of hearing the divine. By this continuous work, we can clear the weeds of programs so we can better handle life with ease and grace. As I listened to the self-help author narrate his journey of woes, I kept saying, "I love you," quietly, inside my mind, to the divine. By the time he was done talking, he seemed lighter and happier. As Dr. Hulen keeps reminding me and everyone else, the divine is not a concierge. You don't ask for things, you just clean. I loved spending time with Dr. Hulen. He never seemed to mind my questions. One day I asked him if there were any advanced methods for cleaning. After all, he has been doing Ho'oponopono for over 25 years. Surely he's created or received some other methods besides I love you to clear memories. "What do you do these days to clean?" I asked him one day. He chuckled and said, "Kill the divine." I was stunned. "Kill the divine?" I repeated, wondering what he meant. "I know that even inspiration is one step removed from the zero state," he explained to me. "I'm told that I have to kill the divine to be home." "But how do you kill the divine?" "Keep cleaning," he said. Always, 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 it kept coming back to the one singular refrain that healed any and all wounds. "I love you, I'm sorry, please forgive me, and thank you." When I was in Warsaw, Poland, at the end of 2006, I decided to introduce the idea of zero limits and the zero state to my audience. I had been there speaking for 2 days about hypnotic marketing and my book, The Attractor Factor. I found the people to be open-minded, loving, and eager to learn. So I taught them what I've shared with you here, that you are responsible for everything in your life and that the way to heal everything is with a simple I love you. Though the audience needed a translator for my presentation, they seemed to absorb my every word. But one person asked me an interesting question. "People here in Poland spend all day praying to God and going to church, but yet we have had war. Our city was bombed by Hitler. We lived under martial law for years, and we have suffered. Why didn't those prayers work, and what's different with this Hawaiian one?" I paused to consider the right answer, wishing Dr. Hulen was here to help me. In the moment, I gave this reply. "People don't get what they say so much as what they feel. Most people who pray don't believe they will be heard or they will be helped. Most people pray from a place of desperation, which means they will attract more of what they are feeling, more desperation." My questioner seemed to understand and accept my answer. He nodded. But when I returned to the States, I wrote Dr. Hulen and asked him what he would have replied. He wrote back the following email.
"Awo Akua, thank you for the opportunity to clean with whatever is going on in me that I experience as your question. An American showed up in the class that I did in Valencia, Spain, 2 years ago. Quote, 'My grandson was ill with cancer,' she said to me in a break. Quote, 'I prayed for him, asking that he not die, but he died anyway. How come?' Quote. My reply, quote, 'You prayed for the wrong person,' I said. 'Better to have prayed for yourself, asking forgiveness for whatever was going on in you that you experienced your grandson as being ill. People don't see themselves as a source of their experiences. Rarely are prayers directed at what is going on in the petitioner, by the petitioner. Peace abide, Yehoyakala Yulen.
I loved his perfectly honest answer. Again and again, his theme is that nothing is outside of us. When most people pray, they act like they have no power or responsibility. But in Ho'oponopono, you are totally responsible. The prayer is to ask for forgiveness for whatever is in you that caused the outer circumstance. The prayer is a reconnecting to the divine. The rest is trusting the divine to heal you. As you heal, so does the outer. Everything, without exception, is inside you. Larry Dossey said it well in his book, Healing Words. We need to recall at these times that prayer, in its function as a bridge to the absolute, has no failure rate. It works 100% of the time, unless we prevent this realization by remaining oblivious to it. One thing bothered me about my work with Dr. Hulen. As I kept growing and having insights, I worried that all my previous books were wrong and were going to mislead people. In The Attractor Factor, for example, I praised the power of intention. Now, years after writing that book, I know intention is a fool's game, an ego's toy, and that the real source of power is inspiration. I also now knew that agreeing to life is the great secret to happiness, not controlling life. Too many people, myself included, were visualizing and affirming in order to manipulate the world. I now knew that isn't necessary. You're better off going with the flow while constantly cleaning whatever comes up. I began to feel like Neville Goddard must have felt. Neville is one of my favorite mystical writers. His early books were about creating your own reality by turning feeling into fact. He called it the law in such books as The Law and the Promise. The law referred to your ability to influence the world with feeling. The promise referred to surrendering to God's will for you. Neville began his career by teaching people how to get what they want with what he called awakened imagination. The short description of that phrase refers to Neville's favorite quote, "Imagining creates reality." His very first book was titled At Your Command, which I later republished. In it, he explained that the world is at your command. Tell the divine or God what you want, and it will deliver it. But by Neville's later years, after 1959, he had awakened to a greater power, that of letting go and letting the divine operate through you. The thing is, he couldn't recall his earlier books like a car manufacturer might recall a defective car. I have no idea if they upset him or not. I'm guessing not. He left them in the world because he felt the law was useful to help people get through the bumps in life. But I wanted to recall my books. I felt they were misleading people. I told Dr. Hulen that I felt like I was doing a disservice to the world. Your books are like stepping stones, Dr. Hulen explained. People are at various steps along the path. Your books speak to them where they are. As they use that book to grow, they become ready for the next book. You don't need to recall any books at all. They are all perfect. As I thought of my books of Neville, of Dr. Hulen, and of all the readers past, present, and to come, all I could say was, I'm sorry, please forgive me, thank you, and I love you. Clean, clean, clean. The Truth Behind the Story. I wasn't done with Dr. Hulen. I still didn't have the complete story on his work at that mental hospital. You never saw patients, I asked him again one day. Never? I saw them in the hallway, but never as a patient in my office, he said. One time I saw one of them and he said, I could kill you, you know. I replied saying, I bet you could do a good job, too. Dr. Hulen went on to say, When I started at the state hospital working with the criminally mentally ill, we had 3 or 4 major attacks between patients every day. There were maybe 30 patients at that time. People were shackled, put in seclusion, or restricted to the ward. Doctors and nurses walked through the halls with their backs against the walls, afraid of being attacked. After just a few months of cleaning, we saw a complete change for the better. No more shackles, no more seclusion, and people were allowed to leave and do things like work and play sports. But what did he do exactly to begin this transformation? I had to take complete responsibility within myself for actualizing the problems outside myself, he said. I had to clean my own toxic thoughts and replace them with love. There wasn't anything wrong with the patients. The errors were in me. As Dr. Hu Len explained it, the patients and even the ward didn't feel love, so he loved everything. I looked at the walls and saw they needed painted, he told me, but none of the new paint would stick. It would peel off right away. So I simply told the walls that I loved them. Then one day, someone decided to paint the walls, and this time the paint stuck. That sounded weird, to say the least, but I was getting accustomed to this sort of talk from him. I finally had to ask the question that had been bothering me the most. Did all of the patients get released? 2 of them never were, he said. They were both transferred elsewhere. Otherwise, the entire ward was healed. Then he added something that truly helped me understand the power of what he had been doing. If you want to know what it was like during those years, write Omaka Okala Hamakuchi. She worked as the social worker during the time I was there. I did. She wrote the following to me.
Dear Joe, again, thank you for this opportunity. Please know that I am writing this in collaboration with Emery Lance Oliveira, who is a social worker that worked on the unit with Dr. Hu Len. I found myself the social worker assigned to the newly opened forensic unit at the State Mental Hospital in Hawaii. This unit was called CISU for Closed Intensive Security Unit. It housed prisoner patients who had committed often heinous felony crimes of murder, rape, assault, robbery, molestation, and combinations thereof, and were also diagnosed with or thought to possibly have a serious mental disorder. Some of the prisoner patients were found not guilty by reason of insanity and sentenced to be there. Some were floridly psychotic and required treatment, and some were there for examination and assessment to determine their fitness to proceed, i.e. their ability to understand the charges against them and participate in their own defense. Some were schizophrenic, some bipolar, some mentally retarded, while others were diagnosed psychopaths or sociopaths. There were also those who were trying to convince the courts they were one or all of the above. All were locked in the unit 24/7 and allowed to leave, escorted in wrist and ankle restraints only for medical or court appointments. Most of their day was spent in a seclusion room, a locked room with concrete walls and ceilings, a locked bathroom, and no windows. Many were highly medicated. Activities were few and far between. Incidents were expected occurrences, patients attacking staff, patients attacking other patients attacking themselves, patients attempting escapes. Staffing incidents were also a problem. Staff manipulating patients, drugs, sick leave, and workers' compensation problems, staff discord, perpetual turnover in psychologist, psychiatrist, and administrator positions, plumbing problems, electrical problems, and so on and so on. It was an intense, volatile, depressing and wild place to be. Even the plants would not grow. And even when it was relocated to a newly renovated, much more secure unit with a fenced recreation area, no one expected anything to really change. So when another one of those psychologists showed up, it was assumed he would try to stir things up attempt to implement state-of-the-art programs, then leave almost as soon as he came. Ho-hum. However, this time, it was a Dr. Hu Len who, besides being friendly enough, appeared to do next to nothing. He didn't do evaluations, assessments, or diagnoses, provided no therapy, and did not perform any psychological testing. He often came late, did not attend case conferences, or participate in mandated record-keeping. He instead practiced a weird process of self-identity Ho'oponopono, or S-I-H, which had something to do with taking 100% responsibility for yourself, looking only at yourself and allowing the removal of negative and unwanted energies within you. Ho-hum. Weirdest of all was the observation that this psychologist seemed always at ease and even really enjoying himself. He laughed a lot, had fun with patients and staff, and seemed to genuinely enjoy what he was doing. Everyone seemed to love and enjoy him in return, even if it didn't appear he did much work. And things began to shift. Seclusion rooms began clearing. Patients were becoming responsible for their own needs and business. They also began participating in planning and implementing programs and projects for themselves. Medication levels were also dropping, and patients were being allowed to leave the unit sans restraints. The unit became alive, calmer, lighter, safer, cleaner, more active, fun, and productive. The plants began to grow. Plumbing problems became almost non-existent. Incidents of violence on the unit became rare. And staff seemed more harmonious, relaxed, and enthusiastic. In fact, all had become calmer. Rather than sick leave problems and understaffing, overstaffing and losing positions now became a concern. Two specific situations made an especially memorable impact on me. There was a severely delusional, paranoid patient with a history of violence who had seriously hurt several people in the hospital and out in public, and who had had multiple hospital admissions. He was sent to CISU this time for committing a murder. He was creepily frightening to me. The hairs on the back of my neck stood up whenever he was anywhere close. It was then much to my surprise that a year or two after Dr. Hu Len showed up, I spotted him walking in my direction, escorted sans restraints, and the hairs on the back of my neck did not stand up. It felt as if I was just noticing, even when we passed each other almost shoulder to shoulder. There was not my usual getting ready to run reaction. In fact, I noticed he looked calm. I was no longer working on the unit at that time, but had to find out what happened. I learned that he had been out of seclusion and restraints for some time, and the only explanation was that some of the staff were doing the Ho'oponopono Dr. Hu Len had shared with them. The other situation occurred while watching the news on television. I had taken a mental health day off to get away from work and relax. While relaxing, the court appearance of a CISU patient who had molested and murdered a 3 or 4 year old girl showed up. This patient had been hospitalized as he was deemed unfit to proceed on the charges against him. He was examined and evaluated by several psychiatrists and psychologists and given an array of diagnoses which back then would have most likely gotten him a not guilty by reason of insanity or NGRI judgment. He would not have had to go to prison and would have been committed to the less restrictive setting of the state hospital with the possibility of a conditional release. Dr. Hu Len had interacted with this patient, who eventually asked to be taught the SIH process and reportedly was very persistent and consistent in its practice, as the ex-Marine officer he had been would have. He, by now, had been deemed fit to proceed and had a court date to state his plea. Whereas every other patient and their attorney had and would probably always opt for the NGRI plea, this patient did not. The day before he was to appear in court, he dismissed his attorney,